and you've tuned in to another episode of The Wellness Couch, where science and ancient wisdom collaborate. 3ABR 87.6 FM, and we're your hosts, Katarina and Brett Morrison. Now, we've got a great guest on tonight, fantastic guest, the famous neuroscientist. So Dr. Lucia Kelleher made a breakthrough in brain discovery from her PhD, the Brizzy Brain Syndrome, in the early 2000s. So BB, or loss of brain width, is caused by our digital world. So we'll all be interested tonight how the actual phones affect us. How are you going, Lucia?
I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic to have you on tonight. So excited to talk to you about your busy brain syndrome, what you've done in your PhD, and how it actually affects the loss of our brain width with the technology that we have around us at the moment. So so tell us a bit about your PhD. Sounds so very interesting.
Yeah, I actually, busy brain syndrome came about as, it's almost like a synchronicity following my PhD, which was looking at information processing speed, and would you believe, cannabis use with schizophrenics. And so what I was looking at was specifically why so many people with schizophrenia seemingly self-medicate on cannabis. And I discovered that it actually reverses a deficit, a congenital or innate brain deficit. And so as a result of that, I discovered busy brain syndrome, which is effectively the same thing, whereby technology, the overabundance of stimulus due to technology, has caused our brains to basically overprocess, and therefore we look to do things such as consume alcohol compensate and turn it off.
Now, Lucia, I mean, a lot of people that are listening tonight will say, well, I'm not addicted. So, but how often, I'll ask them, how often do they check their phones, and how often do they feel like they can go an entire day without it? So, and there's also studies that suggest that phones are addictive, and many have even stated that they should carry a warning, just like, I guess, poisons. So what type of symptoms do we actually find with someone who's addicted to the smartphone or to technology currently?
Well, there's actually a term for mobile phone addiction. It's called nomophobia. It's been around for quite a few years, probably nearly 10 years. And people aren't addicted to the hardware per se. They're addicted to the status, if you like. So they experience what I would term as status anxiety. So they become anxious with respect to the likes and so forth, with social media in particular, email, anything else. But it's the fact that not so much the phone itself, but it's the content of the phone, and it's the fact that with social media in particular, people are almost obsessed, if you like, with being connected and having people like or, you know, acknowledge their posts. So that's basically what's causing it.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've got all this technology around, like we were talking previously, like we haven't ever been more connected, but yet we're disconnected. You know, and
completely.
Yeah, and like I know myself with patients that come in, I can see that they're experiencing hypersensitivity to Wi-Fi, but many state that their technology is needed and it's a necessity for information for even working purposes. And our society sort of structures us around, I guess, our smart technology, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, and but the thing is, it's like anything in moderation. But what's actually occurred with the brain, from the perspective of nomophobia, is that status checking, if you like, has become a source of anxiety and extreme anxiety in many groups, particularly the younger generation.
Yeah, so this is one of the dangers that we're seeing when they're becoming addicted to that, isn't it?
They just, you know, you see kids, they just can't go without their phone. 20-somethings, they can't go without their phone at all.
Well, it's funny because I know I have a lot of conversations with parents, and they have particular fears that their teens are succumbing to screen addiction. So do we have ways to lessen or even... Actually, before we go there, we probably should go through your research that you found and the findings that you actually found. So are we rewiring our neurotransmitters or our brain by the constant exposure or the seen necessity to constantly check what is going on with our devices?
Effectively, what busy brain syndrome is it's being caused by the digital age or technology age, and the fact that we basically went from an analog environment to a digital environment virtually overnight in terms of human evolution.
Yeah.
So, and what we don't realise is that the impact of information on the brain literally went from, you know, a manageable amount to an exponentially over abundance, literally overnight. So, and people go, oh no, but I don't have my phone with me, and I don't have emails all the time, so I'm not affected. Yes, you are. Yes, and everybody is. And it's, so the brain is, look, there's a couple of things that go on. The brain is effectively what I call a parasite, and the body is the host. The brain is in charge, and the brain has an absolute requirement for energy. So it needs at least 60% of the energy, available energy in the body at any one time, and it will do anything to take that energy.
Yeah,
and it's always sorting itself in terms of the available energy. So what it did when this with this overabundance of stimulus, it basically recognized that it was burning too much energy. So it overcompensated or compensated by pushing more and more things into the unconscious. So that's why we see so many people who forget parts of their journey.
Yeah.
They, you know, people now are terrified of dementia. People think they're going crazy.
Yeah.
I have people all the time saying, have I got, you know, dementia?
I shouldn't be laughing, but yeah, I know. I know that feeling.
Yeah, people think they're nuts, but they're not, because they forget things all the time, and their heads are scrambled and their head aches, you know, as in they feel brain dead, particularly those, you know, with at work. But it's not. It's just the brain having to basically shift its energy around, and the result's pretty hideous.
We are pretty overstimulated, aren't we, in our society? So
completely.
Are you saying that our brains have a limited capacity to what it can process?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's like a glass of water. If you try and overfill a glass of water, it just spills.
Yeah.
So, you know, once it's full, it's full.
Yeah, no doubt. So, like you said, there seems to be a pandemic of memory loss, and I'm laughing because sometimes I do go through that. There's so much going on, so much stimulation, so much that we're expected, you know, to know in our society. So, obviously, there's many factors. However, is it due to this overstimulation with too much information that can be a cause? Are we overloading our minds with too much, you know, living in suburbia or in city life?
Well, it's pretty much everybody. Like, the thing is, people are obsessed with Google and information and stuff these days. You know, people are, you know, watching YouTubes all the time, or they're searching for stuff on the internet all the time. So, you know, we never used to do that. So we used to have a hell of a lot of downtime. We used to have a lot of space in our lives. We don't have that anymore, because we just fill it up with technology, basically. You're like, you know, I'm guilty myself. I spend way too much time on Google just looking at, you know, looking up random stuff, because you can. So, you know what I mean? And it's such a radical change to the way we live, and the biggest losers are free mind, freedom of mind, where you've got space, and, you know, also getting out and about and outside and away from your technology.
Yeah.
Many people rarely do it.
Yeah, it's amazing, because it leaves us with issues like we can't really truly access our full potential capacity, because that requires that we retrain our rewiring system, doesn't it? Our nervous system for more optimal functioning, and we can't do that when we're so overloaded with information.
Mm, mm.
So if you're comparing it to a computer, like our brain's a computer, if it has issues that we're going to encounter problems, is that right?
Well, it's the thing is that our brain, there's essentially three components to the brain. And the human brain is the largest of all species on the planet, and it's allegedly the cleverest terms of its capacity to...
Is that the frontal cortex, that because it's so new and it's so developed? Is that supposed to be why our species is supposed to be the most intelligent?
Yeah.
So what about dolphins? Because they look like they've got a quite developed frontal cortex there.
It's not the same. It's not the same as the human brain. But the other thing is with the human brain, it's just a good processor. So basically it's a massive big processor. But so is a computer. That's why artificial intelligence is getting much better at humans than humans at doing stuff. And, you know, artificial intelligence is just basically computers that can process faster than humans can. And why would you want to process the mad stuff that AI processes, for example? But, you know, AI is, people are afraid of AI. They think it's, you know, it's sinister, but it's not. It's just a more efficient way of processing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that the loser, if you like, is the ability that we as humans have to actually relax, because most people don't know how to anymore.
No, they don't. No. So if you're saying, like, the brain has a problem, like if we compare to a computer, I mean, if the computer program has a problem, they debug it, don't they? Is that the same what we would have to do to our brain if an individual has a issue with behaviour?
No, not really.
You don't debug the brain?
And the thing is that, as I said, there's the three areas of the brain that pretty much that make up all brains of all species on the planet, the human brain processing component of the brain, which all animals have, but it's just much bigger in a human, much, much more complex. But every single species on the planet, human included, have what's called the reptile brain, the brain stem, the survival brain, the animal brain, that basic survival mechanism. And as I said, every single species on the planet has it, humans included. That is where the problem lies with busy brain syndrome. And so that's where the processing gets jammed up. But it's also what causes the anxiety. So the fallout from busy brain syndrome is constant anxiety at varying levels. So it can be low level or it can be high level. And that will fluctuate depending on, you know, the activities that people are participating in. But, you know, there's a lot of people on the planet that are on anti-anxiety and antidepressant medications because of the anxiety.
Yeah, there's definitely pandemics that we're seeing of it. And how does it affect a workspace as well?
Sorry, was that...
How does it affect workspace as well? Because you're saying...
it's terrible. Productivity. It's shocking with work. Yeah, terrible. The productivity impacts are incredible. Like, there was a study I did a few years ago where we uncovered that people are only effective for one third of their time. So one third of their time, they're actually being effective. The rest of the time, they're in a scramble. They're in a mess. And their output is virtually zero.
So did your research encompass all technology or smart technology, like phones,
tablets?
No, it wasn't
so much technology. Yeah. It was just looking at people's effectiveness. So it was actually just looking at... And look, it was self-evaluation. All surveys are; they're just all subjective because it's the only way you can get information out of a human. Rather, you can't stick an electrode in their head and find out what they're thinking. So this was self-report in terms of the effectiveness that people believed that they were able to achieve. But there's also studies that have indicated that, you know, it takes 20 minutes to get back on task when you're disrupted.
20 minutes, wow.
And people are disrupted all the time, constantly disrupted.
So why does it take us that long to get back on track?
Because the thing is that when you're actually concentrating, a lot of stuff has to line up. So you know, it's not that easy. So that's why if you ever find yourself when you're engrossed in something and you forget the time and then you realize, oh my god, it's such and such, because you lose yourself. You actually get so engrossed in what you're doing that the outside world pretty much disappears.
But
that doesn't happen anymore.
No. Wow. Okay. So, look, a lot of people obviously have fears for particularly teens. What can we do to unravel this issue that we have, that they're constantly fixed to the phone?
To their phone.
Yeah.
Look, it's really difficult because they've become pretty much addicted to it, so it's a habit. And with any
can you go
habit
through addiction?
Or tendency.
Yeah, can you lead us along the addiction line and what actually happens to the brain?
Well,
when it lights
yeah,
up?
So... So with any addiction, there's an associated withdrawal process, which is essentially anxiety. So with a phone, for example, people will become increasingly anxious if they're not able to check their phone. You try taking the phone off.
I have seen that.
Yeah,
you're right.
And they start to freak out.
They do.
yeah. And it's not the thing is, nothing's going to happen to them. So the anxiety that they're experiencing is quite mad, really, in terms of, nothing's going to happen to them physically or it's not a dangerous situation. But the fact is that they've become so dependent upon getting that fix from checking their phone that if you do take it away from them, it's literally like taking away a drug from a drug addict or alcohol from an alcoholic.
Yeah, there's opioids involved, aren't there? Well, the brain actually centres light up, don't they? There's certain brain centres that light up.
No, that's a bit of a myth, and people think, you refer to people being addicted to exercise because you're addicted to the endorphins in your brain. Well, no, you can't be, because the concentrations of opioid-like endorphins in the human brain it's such low concentrations you can't possibly become addicted to it. So that's a bit of a myth. But the anxiety is literally the associated with not being able to get their hit. So like I said, if you take the phone away from somebody, and then they'll go into this spiral, it's completely irrational. And, they've done studies where they've observed people having a reaction to having their phone taken away from them and looking at them afterwards. Their own self-evaluation has been, well, that was really quite mad. But, I had that reaction. And people get embarrassed when they see themselves doing it.
Oh, you would. Yeah, because it's an unconscious habit, isn't it? It's an unconscious habit. So, neuroplasticity is quite big. Can we rewire our systems as adults? Because they normally say that by the age of 25, or they used to in the 70s, that we've come a long way, I know, but they used to say by the time you're 25, that's it, your wiring pattern's set. So what?
Well, it just depends on which part of the brain you're talking about. So literally, you can rewire any part of your brain the higher brain. And like with rehabilitation after brain injuries or strokes, the success rate's huge nowadays with being able to fully, learn to walk, talk and do all sorts of things again because of the neuroplasticity. And also, every time you learn something new, you're rewiring your brain. And there's now evidence that the brain can grow new neurons.
That's
that was
fantastic.
Always something that was believed to be impossible, but now there's evidence that the brain does. But the fact is that regrowth will not occur in this case, in this, like with busy brain syndrome, for example. There's no positive effects of rewiring going on at all. In fact, it's the opposite. So.
Really? So, because neurowiring is normally malleable throughout our lives, isn't it? Now they've found out that, it's not set at 25, that, according to choices and attitudes and actions that we do, we can rewire. And so that
So
that doesn't occur with busy brain when you're constantly busy.
No, because the part of the brain that we're referring to where busy brain syndrome occurs in that brain stem, or the survival brain, animal brain, the, the very basic brain, that's hardwired, and for a good reason. So it won't change, because the thing is, it's there for our survival. So if it was able to change, if it was changeable, that means we'd probably all get run over by cars, because so many people walk out in front of cars with their phones. It's ridiculous, particularly in Melbourne.
That part of the brain, what's it responsible for?
Survival.
That we talk about, just for survival. So is it fight, flight?
Yeah, it's fight or flight,
Okay. All right. Yeah. So what's a correct environment then that's conducive to learning for the brain?
So learning as in learning generally or learning...
Well, now they talk a lot about whole brain training, don't they? So we don't focus on... We try not to focus on left or right brain, so we get complete... brain entrainment. So what type of environment do we actually need to for it to be conducive to our learning?
Well, you need to be able to relax for a start. You need to be able to be in a calm state, which people are not in most of the time, including children when they're learning at school because of the constant distraction, because kids have their phones with them in schools these days.
Although there's schools have banned it,
I'm not sure whether they have across the country. I knew that they were thinking about it, but literally the damage has been done, too little, too late. But the reality is that in order to learn, you need to be curious. And curiosity is a phenomenon, if you like, of the that basic reptile or animal brain. And that's why you lose yourself when you actually are engrossed in a situation. You literally lose yourself. Curiosity is a very, very powerful emotion. You see it in babies. You don't see too many, you know, babies, two-year-olds that are got busy brain syndrome. They just don't. So we lose that. We lose that ability. And so therefore, you know, as I said, the brain's naturally able to learn if we're able to enable ourselves or allow ourselves to go into that relaxed state, but we don't most of the time.
No. And, that flight, fight, survival mode, you know, when we're too stressed, our brain kicks into that flight, fight, survival mode, defaults to old neural pathways and patterns, and so it's really hard to break addictions, isn't it, when we're in that mode?
Yeah, well, that's basically what busy brain syndrome is. You're locked. That fight or flight response is locked on. It's there for our survival, and normally in a normal state, we are in the relaxed state, and the fight or flight response will kick in if there's danger. But as I said, what busy brain syndrome is that we're no longer in that relaxed state. We're in the busy brain state or the fight or flight state all the time, which is why people have to do something to turn it off, which is why so many people will consume alcohol, for example.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I don't know, is this still true that it takes about 50 to 144 straight days of practicing something for a new behaviour to set in, for it to become fully wired in the brain? And then if until then we're counting on our motivation, discipline, willpower to follow through?
Yeah, pretty much. And look, it's depends. It's very, very much individually based. There's no panacea or no formula, but look, I always advocate if you're vigilant with a specific behaviour, and when I teach people how to overcome busy brain syndrome, I'll have them practice religiously for 21 days, but they have to monitor, and that's the key. They have to actually self-monitor their own progress, and if they don't, then it won't work.
So it's a lot harder than we think.
Much harder than we think.
Yeah.
Because it's A, you're dealing with an addiction, and B, you're dealing with constant distraction. So the thing is, the constant distraction doesn't go away, even when you're trying very very hard to break the habit. You're still constantly distracted because that's the world we live in. So, you know, it's the next big shiny thing that comes along. It's just the constant stream of shiny things that grab our attention.
So how does this unconscious brain that you talk about just holds power over our habits, since we're talking about habits?
Yeah. Well, and that's because the thing is, it comes back to the brain energy, the available brain energy. So, as I said, the brain's constantly there in the control room. It is the control room, monitoring where it's putting its energy. So it's literally, and the thing is, like I said, it takes 60% of every bit of available energy in our body at all times. And when we're under pressure or stress, then the amount of energy that requires increases. So that's why if you, people that go on a hunger strike, for example, the last thing to ever expire will be the brain.
So you're a behavioural neuroscientist, so you deal with behaviour change all the time. How can we go deeper to attain, self-mastery or to expand our awareness and access even transcendental states, you know? Because, I mean, if it's taken 50 to 144 days to actually change a behaviour, and this isn't easy for people to actually change, you know, negative behaviours that they have or that they've been programmed that are in their DNA, you know, because obviously it's taken them that long to develop that bad habit as well.
Well, the thing is that another impact or effect of the digital age or the age of technology, which is probably only 25 years ago, literally, and it's steadily been increasing, particularly since 2007 with the advent of the smartphone. People are just, their capacity to notice their environment and be aware has been severely eroded. And people just, like I said, they don't pay attention anymore because their brain's literally overloaded. And so to be in that space of silence and have a space in your day or your thought processes, people just don't do it anymore.
Jeez.
And we've become so mental as humans and so out of balance that, you know, we're about 95% mental, which means that we're thinking 95% of the time.
That's scary. Where,
you know, you look at Einstein, you know, his imagination is more important than knowledge, as he quotes. He's dead right. Because imagination is space. It's when you actually just drift into space, into have a gap. We don't do that anymore because we're constantly thinking. But our monkey mind never stops.
You know,
and it's hideous.
It's interesting because cardiovascular is one of the biggest trends at the moment too, issues with myopathies and things like that. But and the reason why I bring that up is because research also says that the heart receives a lot of frequencies prior to the brain before it actually ignites the brain with what's going on. So could that be possibly translating in that way? Because we're receiving...
Well, the thing is that, you know,
we're receiving so much stimulation, you know, from outside sources. If it goes to the heart first and then to the brain, I mean, could we be experiencing mechanical issues because of that? It's being overwhelmed.
Yeah, and in terms of information that comes from the external environment, it does go to the brain first because that's where the survival mechanism is, and it doesn't go anywhere prior. It may go to the heart or whatever you afterwards, but it will not go there first. It'll go directly to the brain because every single bit of stimulus has to be assessed for a threat. Because if it didn't, then we'd be extinct.
Okay.
So there's a lot of myth around, and there's a lot of woo-woo.
It's just research that's coming from the I think the Mind Institute as well as one in America. That are saying that it's picking up a lot of frequencies prior to events happening, and so it it like precludes what's going to happen, and then it sends the messages to the brain to actually program the rest of the neuro system.
No, like I must say, I'm ignorant with that idea.
Okay. All right. So what about our negative default patterns? Can you speak about that in terms of behaviour? What I should say, like the more we access a certain pattern or emotion, the stronger that the connection becomes in our wiring system. Is that right? And so it makes it easier to access. So sometimes that can actually work against us. You know, when we develop a negative default pattern.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so should I
that's what any habit is.
So how do we actually instill new patterns, you know, to rid of that habit?
Well, there's no difference today to, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, or even 100 years ago to breaking bad habits. But the issue now is that the amount of bad habits or bad or ineffective habits, for want of a better word, is increased exponentially. So everybody now has loads of discontent with things that they're not happy about with themselves. So, you know, everybody wants to change something about their body. Look at the Botox and all this stuff that we've got these days. Every single person has some complaint or, I would say, many complaints about the way they perceive themselves. And that's also a fallout from an excessive amount of negative emotions, because the fight or flight response brain syndrome, by definition, puts you into a state of negative emotions. And you're not going to, you know, you're not jumping for joy.
No.
In that state. So, you know, it's the old proverbial glass half empty as opposed to half full. So you look at things really negatively. So perceptions are very negative. So what people would, in a different state, ordinarily just pass up, they all self-criticise, you know. We're much more critical of ourselves than anybody else.
Definitely, yeah. So do we have to establish patterns to reinforce, like, positivity to replace those negative habits or default patterns?
It's with anything, and with busy brain syndrome, you've got to reverse the default, which has become the negative. So you've got to actually push or get the scales balanced again, because we used to be balanced. Prior to the advent of technology, we were quite balanced.
Yeah.
Even though we perceived that, you know, things were tough. They weren't.
Is gratitude and journaling a great pattern to follow?
They are, but the thing is that you've got to be aware of whether you're doing these things from a mental perspective or you're doing them from a, what I call, a sensory or a feeling perspective.
Okay.
That's not an emotion.
No.
It's actually the a sensory feeling within the body. And yes, with any of those activities, if they're genuine and you feel it, they're good. But if you just are thinking about it, it's completely ineffective.
So we're getting back into the feeling.
It's got to be feeling.
Yeah. All right.
And it's not emotions. Emotions are not feelings. That's just a way to describe a thought.
True. But then I thought then it goes into a feeling.
A feeling, people, and the thing is that we've done ourselves a massive disservice in terms of identifying.
Oh, can you explain?
Well, emotions are called feelings. Yeah. Emotions are not feelings.
No. Okay.
A feeling is a visceral sensation associated with your body.
Okay.
An emotion is a description. Oh, I am happy.
Yeah.
That is a description of how you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I am sad. That is the description of how you're thinking. To feel, fear. You feel it in your body. To feel joy, for example, you feel it in your body.
Oh, you do, don't you? You do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, So do you get individuals to catch themselves or observe, you know, the old pattern so they can interrupt? Is that the synapses? If they interrupt a pattern of behaviour, they stop the synapses from wiring together and then they can disconnect an old pattern?
It's not that they stop them from wiring together, but it's about disrupting the, or not disrupting, but, yeah, but essentially getting the balance back. So rather than so think of it as a pendulum.
Yeah.
And this system's really simple. It's not complicated at all. You know, people get a bit excited by how complicated the brain is. This part of the brain's really simple.
Okay.
It's either an on or off. It's literally like a switch, on, off. So when it's on, as in the fight or flight response is on and you're in busy brain, I call it red brain state, and it feels really yucky. And people feel really yucky. They complain.
Yeah.
If you ask people about, oh, you know, what does it feel like when you're stressed? Oh, you know, my eyes hurt, I've got a headache, oh, my neck hurts, my shoulders ache, oh, my stomach, I've got irritable bowel. And, you know, they can just reel off a litany of symptoms, and they're all physiological.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
But you ask them the same question, all right, so what do you feel when you're not in that state? They cannot tell you a thing.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Because they have no idea of the association within their body.
You're making this very simple to me. It sounds very simple. It almost sounds like, and tell me if I'm wrong, remove yourself from that technology. Get into patterns where you've got that space where you can think when you can feel, and you can actually remove yourself from that technology. Is that what
you're
saying?
Absolutely. And you've actually got to learn. You've got to relearn to feel what it feels like when you're in that positive state. And like I said, because we're so used to being in that negative state, that's why people drink so much alcohol. How many Dan Murphys were there in 1999 in this country?
Gosh, wow, yeah.
Do you know how many?
Yeah. No, I don't, no.
There was one.
Wow.
How many are there now?
Gee, what's the research come up with?
There is over 300 Dan Murphys in this country.
Wow.
Plus all the other booze outlets. Now, who's drinking it?
What's the age bracket that you found?
Everybody's drinking it.
Okay.
There's no age bracket.
There's no age
Everybody's
bracket anymore.
Everybody's self-medicating.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's not just this country. It's a global pandemic. It's a global pandemic of self-medication on alcohol to relieve
anxiety
and stress.
Yeah, okay. But, okay, so when you first see an individual that's addicted to their phone, you'll obviously see anxiety. How do you get past or transition past that anxiety where they feel, okay, I can leave it alone now? Because most people, when they're going through anxiety, will need something to make them feel, I guess, safe.
Well, again, what I tend to do is just stick to the very simple process of the on or off switch, because otherwise it just becomes mental and complicated. We just bring it back to the very, very simple basics, because that's what it is.
They just remove.
And I teach people what it feels like when they're not in the stressed state. So that's all they have to do. They don't have to think anything. They just have to feel. And so when I teach people in my classes, that's what I teach them to do. And I send them off and I say, you, every time you remember, you feel this positive physical reaction in your body. And I have to exaggerate when I first teach them, because they've come so far to the other side where they've lost the ability to even feel what it feels like in the body when you're not stressed.
I don't think most people would remember. I don't think most people would have a recollection of that, of what it feels like.
No, they don't. They don't. But that's literally the easiest, most effective and quickest way to break any habit. Any other method or any other strategy is mental, and you're compounding it. So it's basically you're trying to overcome a mental problem with a mental tool.
Okay.
Doesn't work.
Righty. Okay. So there's no other way that we can stimulate our brain in a harmonious way to correct those, you know, issues?
No. Because the brain, like I said, it's the control center of our body, but it's completely dependent upon the body for all its input.
Yeah.
The only, you know, you can't sort of cut a hole in your head and pour stuff in. That's the only way you get information into your brain is through your body. It's the five senses. So, you know, if you hear something, you read something, you touch something, that's it. So you actually reverse it with the same process using your senses.
Yeah. So most people really have to put their technology away, aren't they? Like, you know, get more family time, particularly like if they've got kids that are addicted to their phones and showing those symptoms, they really need to get out there, don't they? Put the phone, leave them behind, leave them in another room and actually get out in the park or get out to the beach or something for a few hours and leave that technology all behind. So behaviour modelling comes into this, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. What's happened is, look, technology has become the babysitter for kids. And, look, it's I can understand how it happens, but, you know, you're creating that habit from really early age and giving technology to little kids. And, oh, you know, they say, oh, you know, they learn through technology. Well, no. The thing is that they've got to actually learn to be a human first.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got a whole generation of kids that they don't have curiosity, they don't know how to, they're not innovative, they don't know how to problem solve, they're not resourceful because they've just been stuck on their technology. So it's extraordinary the state that, you know, we're going to find ourselves in where kids literally can't do anything.
Do we have, as a society, are we to blame because we place a lot more emphasis on one side of the brain than the other? You know, like our left brain processing centre seems to be the core to our Western world, you know, the reason, the logic, the science, the IQ discipline.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we leave our empathy and intuition and EQ. So, and that's why I think I asked you about the inception of the whole brain training. That is taking a while to reach our institutions, you know, like it's starting to change. I know it's important to balance the whole brain, but can we work on our weaker areas of the brain to bridge, you know, like that whole brain gap that we've got in society at the moment?
Yeah, we can. And but the thing is, we don't value creativity and cultural pursuits and artistic pursuits. We just don't value them. Like more and more universities, for example, are scrapping anything in that space. Like, you know, drama, for instance. There's one university in Victoria that does drama. One. Like, you know, and yet, ironically, performing arts and so forth is massive in this state. It's huge.
So didn't we see the government recently scrap grants to the arts world as well?
No, but it's kind of like the interesting thing is that it's focusing at the wrong end. It should be with the education system and getting kids to be creative in schools. And I'm not the only one that bangs on about this. Sir Ken Robinson on his TED Talk, the most watch TED Talk ever in 2005, what he was all about. And what's changed since 2005? Nothing. It's got worse.
So what does that mean for us as a society if we're heading that way, you know, where the where we're putting a lot of emphasis on that left brain processing?
Well, we're just becoming more and more and more and more mental. And as a result, we become more and more and more and more anxious because we're so out of balance.
Does that mean we're
more... And like I was saying before, I'd hazard a guess that we're about 90%+ mental, where we should be balanced.
So does that mean we're more and more disconnected and that's why we're seeing environmental issues, you know, we're seeing a lot of pollution around because there's more disconnection going on?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of that issues, yeah.
It's all linked and it's you know, the thing is, that's why, you know, Indigenous people, they, I mean, in some countries they're not as ostracised as they are here, but this, they were balanced. You know, they came from the land. They knew, and Indigenous cultures all over the world are much more balanced than Westerners. And, you know, we can take a big leaf out of their book.
I think so.
I do a lot of work in New Zealand, and the Maoris are amazing. They're just incredible. And the New Zealanders, they've actually realised the value and the benefit of the Maori culture. So they've integrated, and they've been doing a lot of, well, they've been integrating for a long time. So they're just, they're light years ahead of this country in terms of their balance, if you like. They're not nearly so mental as people in this country. They have issues, but nothing like this country.
So sad to actually see that disconnection, trying to get people reunited back with nature, you know, so that connect, they can connect to nature, they can connect to themselves once again.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about brainwaves? How did that come into it? So what are brainwaves? Because I guess a lot of people